Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Genuine Chit Chat. This week, I'm joined by Aidan Rosewell. Now, Aidan is the host of two podcasts. One is called Room, which is a fictional interview podcast, and I think the first couple of episodes are coming out soon, and Days of My Life podcast, which is an audio drama, but it's like an autobiography of Aidan's life, and some of the things that he's experienced are crazy. So this chat is quite an interesting one. The subject matter makes it sound like it's a very dark, deep chat, and it is deep in a lot of senses, but it's also light-hearted in the way that myself and Aidan talk about it. And Aidan is very, very open about these things, and the way he speaks about them and things in a very open and honest way, it really means that this is such an enjoyable podcast to listen to, even given the subject matter. Now, I'm not saying if it was deep and dour and upsetting that it wouldn't be enjoyable to listen to, but it's a slightly different kind of podcast that you'd expect. So I just want to preface that before saying the subject matter, before we kind of get into things. So the chat actually starts with us talking about Days of Our Life, which is a podcast that I really recommend to anyone. I started listening to it sort of to research, listening to or speaking with Aidan, and I got hooked. I've listened to all of them, and they're absolutely incredible. The production's really good, and the way he talks about things really good, the way the story is brought out, it's really, really interesting. So I really recommend people check that out. But so basically what happens in his journey, a lot of it is talking about his struggles with drug addiction. There's a time where he overdosed on amphetamine, which he speaks about in this podcast. He's got a three-part called Lost and Found at the end, toward the newer episodes as of releasing this. Lost and Found part 1, 2, and 3, and that's about him going to India, where he'd never been abroad before. He went to India by himself when he was just a young man to try and kind of find himself in a way. And he went to like a sort of a meditation place. He goes to lots of different places in India to try and kind of find himself. So it's really interesting hearing about his journey of self-discovery in a sense. He talks about sort of why he got into drugs, why he thinks that sort of he got into drugs, as well as all the difficulties that he had in his life leading up to that point. We speak about some of the stigma surrounding drug users and addicts, the discussion between sort of legalization, decriminalization, sort of what can be good and bad about that, you know, whether cannabis is a gateway drug, and loads of other things in that sort of realm. So it's quite a drug-heavy discussion conversation, but obviously that's because of Aidan's life, especially what he talks about in Days of My Life, is a lot around his drug use and essentially the effects that it had on him. Me and Aidan do also talk about, you know, Aidan's mother passed away from breast cancer when he was, I think, about 18, and my dad obviously passed away when I was 19 of cancer, so we do talk about that as a little bit in there as well, just in case anyone, as a little trigger warning, just in case anyone would be upset about that. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking about all the sort of stuff we talk about in this podcast because I couldn't do it justice in this intro. So I want everyone to kind of get in there, listen to it, love it, and then go check out the podcasts, which I have left links in the description for that. Just before the chat gets started, there'll be a quick promo for Heather Vickery's The Brave Files. I've had Heather on the show before. I think I'm going to be, I did an episode with her a little while ago. I think that's going to be airing soon-ish. And her podcast is very similar to Genuine Chit Chat, except it speaks specifically to really inspiring people. So with my show, you know, I talk to people about movies, video games, drug addictions, podcasts, anything and everything. Heather's is a lot more about the individual stories and, you know, the people. There's some people in there. There's a gentleman from Uganda who was helping give passage for LGBTQ people. There's transgender people. There's people who've left certain religions, like loads of really interesting people. So I if you like this show and you like the more inspirational sort of uplifting aspect of Genuine Chit Chat, go check out The Brave Files because it is incredible. Anyway, that's enough from me, guys, before I ramble on and just talk my way through any new listeners wanting to listen to the actual chat. So I'll be back at the end after the part one of our chat to talk about what's coming up in part two and what to expect if you subscribe to Genuine Chit Chat and other sort of things and such like. So, you know, like on the usual social media channels, share, review, all that usual podcast jazz. And I really appreciate all you guys listening. So thanks a lot for that. And I'll talk to you at the end.
This is Heather Vickery. I'm the host of the Brave Files podcast. The Brave Files is an interview show that shares stories of real people who choose to live courageously every day. Each week, we introduce you to a new person that has decided to make brave choices despite all of their fears. From being a social justice warrior to murder in self-defense, to starting a business that allows you to travel the world and everything in between. There are a million ways to choose bravely each and every day. We also feature a charity of the week and learn actionable ways to help make the world better together. The Brave Files provides insight, encouragement, and connection on a deeply human level. So if you're looking for a podcast that's compelling, engaging, and inspiring, check out The Brave Files. You'll find us anywhere you enjoy podcasts.
Welcome to Genuine Chit Chat, where we have honest conversations with interesting people. And I'm your host, Mike Burton. I am joined today by Aidan Rosewell. Aidan, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's great to have you on. And, you know, we started speaking on Twitter a little bit, and I found out that you have two podcasts, one that's sort of just starting and one that's been going for a little bit longer. So do you want to sort of introduce yourself and introduce your podcasts?
Yeah, thanks, Mike, very much for having me on. It's a pleasure. I've got two podcasts, one which is more established, which is called Days of My Life. I suppose I describe it as a sort of drama, autobiography / memoir. It's drama in the sense that it contains drama, but it's all true. Everything that happens in the show actually happened to me. Personally, it was a very therapeutic experience. It's the first time that I delved into doing podcasts and putting audio out there. It all came to me in a moment. Last summer before, I'd been listening to podcasts for a long time and enjoying them. And I thought, you know, that's something I want to do. So I think there's about 14 episodes out, something like that. And it kind of starts in the 1990s on the day that Princess Diana died. That was a kind of turning point for me in my life. I overdosed on drugs. I fell out of a car and sort of passed out and was abandoned by the people that I was with. And through a really nice sort of act of kindness, this guy kind of came and scooped me up, found me by the side of the road, took me back to his house and sort of nursed me back to life a little bit. I managed to get back to my house and was kind of feeling horrendous. I'd basically taken about 8 grams of amphetamine by accident. I thought, oh, wow. I took about 1.5 to 2 grams of what I thought was amphetamine. It was actually base amphetamine. So it's like much, much stronger.
Mm. Before it gets cut and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was on my way to a rave and I was kind of getting ready to have my usual kind of Saturday night out. I was 16 years old. And I had this kind of turning point where I watched in the small hours of the morning that Princess Diana had been hurt in this car crash, and I was sort of smoking weed and trying to sort of ease myself off this kind of overdose. And I was like blacking out and waking up, smoking bongs. And then the news changed to Princess Diana, not injured. She's now dead. I had this moment where I was like, God, you know, that really is like a terrible thing to happen to someone. And I thought, I don't ever want to end up like this again. I don't want to be sort of left by the side of the road. And I was involved in lots of kind of dodgy groups and not gangs, but kind of networks of people where I was sort of supplying drugs and sort of dealing drugs a bit to try and fund my own drug habits. And also a big part of the show is my mum, who died of breast cancer. I sort of quit that kind of lifestyle to spend time with her before she died. So that's the beginning of the episode. And then it goes all the way through kind of stuff in my childhood up to I'm 22 years old. And I end up having this kind of epiphany on a beach in India where I realize that there's something within me that I perhaps been running away from and hadn't been like harnessing. So I like to think that it's a little bit of a journey. It's been reviewed by a few people. One of my favorite reviews of it is it's drip feed depression, which, you know, when you put stuff out there, you know, it's hard, particularly when it's you and other people get to listen to your life. But I saw that review and I thought, well, yeah, it kind of was. So it's a bit of a challenge for me because as I've done them, I kind of, days of my life, there's only actually maybe one or two episodes that I listen to and I think, oh, I really like that episode. Some of them, I think they were just kind of therapeutic for me to get out there. But it's got a small kind of fan base and people have messaged me and said some really nice, kind things about it. But it's on a break at the moment. It's going to come back and it's going to be much more interesting because it's difficult myself. I'm 38 years old and I'm sort of talking about stuff that happened 20 years ago. And I'm a very different person to the 16-year-old kind of drug abusing, chaotic lifestyle, kind of grief ridden late teens. I'm married now and I have a daughter. I have a good career. I haven't done drugs for a long time and I don't have any desire to. So it's been slightly frustrating because I'm ready to start doing some more stuff with that show that is going to be very different to the first half of the show, if you like.
I mean, you've summed that up absolutely incredibly there. I mean, when you messaged me on Twitter, I did my usual of just, normally if I have a guest on or someone who could potentially be a guest, if they have a podcast, I'll look into that a little bit. If they have some music or whatever, I'll kind of do some degree of research and kind of go from there. But with your show, I listened to, I think one of the ones you recommended was The Beginner's Guide to Being an Atheist. And then one of the other ones was The Misadventures of the Cocaine Kid. And I listened to those two, as well as Dyslexic Idols. And I was like, this is absolutely amazing. And so I just listened to all of them, except I missed the first four. But apart from that, which I'm going to go back to after we've spoken of things, I've really, really enjoyed like your show. And I'm going to be recommending it to more people. And what I was surprised by was how it is quite like an audio drama, as you kind of put it. Like, it's obviously autobiographical. When you speak at the start, you explain it a bit, but you put music along with it, which and some sound effects, which does actually really help with the immersion and things. But also with some of the other voices and things, do you do all of those voices, or do you get like friends or other people you kind of vaguely know to do them?
There's an episode that you may have missed. That's my fault. There was a glitch on my feed, so it wasn't showing the first four episodes. So I think episode four is called The Treble, and that's about the night that I'm a lifelong Manchester United fan. It was in between my mum dying and my mum's funeral that Manchester United won the European Cup. And me and my brother, I have my brother Hugh on, and we sort of talk about that night. So he's there. Apart from voices, there's a few samples. So I sampled Malcolm X for the Dyslexic Idols one. I sampled Gandhi, Martin Luther King. They were kind of heroes for me. I dropped out of school when I was 11 years old, didn't have any sort of positive male role models in my life. And just by a lucky accident, one of my mum's kind of hippie friends gave me a copy of Malcolm X. And I can remember watching that. It blew my mind. He just became my instant kind of hero. And I think because he was a sort of an outsider, an underdog, because he was discriminated against, but he was fighting for something, it kind of mirrored how I saw my own little struggle. I sort of dropped out of school and I knew that I had something to give to the world, but I didn't know what. And I loved his kind of by any means necessary kind of attitude. So I think I had one friend appear in it as a police officer in The Adventures of the Cocaine Kid. He's not a professional actor. I had a fellow podcaster called Phil Osher, who does his own show called Aferin, the Dark Saga. And he played Dan, a reoccurring drug dealer who wasn't a very pleasant sort of positive role in my life. And then I think the last voice, there's a couple more voice samples. So I sampled George Bush. I just managed to find that clip of, you know, the address he gave after 9/11, because one of the episodes is based around 9/11. And kind of when you look at 9/11 back and he's coming on and he's talking about, you know, as I walk through the shadow of death, fear not, you know, you're not alone. It really kind of tied in well with the narrative of the story for me, because the narrative of that story for me was I need to get out of England. I need to get away from Western culture. Hence Lost and Found being the last sort of three episodes. And the last sample is a real kind of great male role model figure in my life that I found when I was in India, which is Richard Albert, who's known as Ram Dass. He's this kind of spiritual guru, I guess, but not in the kind of cultish kind of, you know, Lamborghinis kind of guru. You know, he's a legitimate kind of yogi who went on pilgrimages to India, and he dedicated his life to helping people that are poor. And some of his kind of audio, ironically, it was audio I found in India, these tapes really helped me sort of start turning my life around. So they're the samples of people that appear in the show.
Wonderful. And just before we go off, because there's 100 things to unpack there, which I do want to get into, you've got one other show as well, which is kind of in the midst of being launched at the moment. Do you want to just briefly talk about that? I'll include the description in the show notes as well.
So the new fiction podcast, it's going to be launching in November 2019. There's a small trailer out as we speak. It's going to be a fiction show, and it's a kind of, it's a bit of a mess of stories. There is a very small narrative being that I play myself. I'm this person who's locked in this room that is floating just above the planet Earth. I don't know why I'm there. I don't know how to get out. I don't know what reason I am there for. And people appear in this room. So Joe Brogan, who's obviously everyone knows who we're talking about there, he appears and starts trying to do his podcast. And we sort of have this story that I hope kind of leaves people entertained. We're gone sort of 10-minute journeys. That's the basis of it. That really, it's very lazy writing by me. I realized that I didn't want to write any backstory or anything. I just wanted to give myself a situation where I could write characters that had a lifespan of around 10 minutes. And in that 10 minutes, I can do whatever I want with them. And then when I'm finished with them, I can just kill them off. And that felt like fun to me and such a good thing to do after days of my life, because it's a nice distance to go into the fictional world from the very real world of my life.
I was going to say the two podcasts are quite ironically the one that is fictitious and the one that is real. It seems like the stand is to swap them, because obviously you've got an audio drama, which is a true stories autobiographical, and you've got an interview show, which the interviewees are fictional. Whereas obviously normally it'd be the other around. Most people's audio dramas are fictional and most people's interview shows are real people. So it's quite interesting that you kind of flip those around.
Yeah, I wanted to play with the ideas of, what would I do if I was stuck in a room and this person just appears there? Like, what would I do with them if I didn't know that they were about to appear? They didn't know. And we had 10 minutes together. What could we explore in 10 minutes? So not all of the episodes follow that kind of interview path, but they're kind of, some of them are just sort of monologues, and some of them are like Rocket Girl, for example, is just this kind of, a young woman who's kind of talking into a dictaphone to her parents. She's going out to do something, to explore something, and the tale kind of enrolls in sort of 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, because you sent me to links to listen to the first episode of The Room, and I thought they were incredibly entertaining. And one thing I liked a lot about your podcast, Days of My Life, is with audio dramas especially, you know, there are a lot that are quite long or quite varying length and things, but yours were, you know, people listen to my show, each episode's about an hour long, sometimes a bit more, whereas Days of My Life, generally they're around 10 to 15 minutes, and it means that, like, on my commute to work, I don't, for like an hour drive, I don't always necessarily want to listen to a podcast for a whole hour. So you can listen to yours and I can listen to like two or three episodes and go, the last 10, 15 minutes, kind of fancy listen to music or something like that. And I think that the format that you've done them in, the way you've done them, is really, they all go together really, really well. And I was generally just surprised how good they sound and how immediately hooked I was. Like, not because of anything to do with the show, but normally with audio dramas or other sort of podcasts, it takes me a while to really sort of get into them, in a sense. But I thought yours were amazing. So you mentioned that you started doing it sort of last year. Was there something specific that kind of triggered it? There was like an event that triggered you doing it, or was it just kind of in the background? Because you mentioned it slightly earlier in the chat. Was there something that was kind of in the background a little bit for a while and you just kind of finally brought it forward last summer, or was there something else?
I think really it was in a moment. for a long time, because of anyone that listens to the show will see that I had a lot going on. I was a kind of teenage carer. My mum died. I dropped out of school. I had quite prolific drug use. So even now in my 30s, some of that time was kind of just a bit hazy in the back of my head. And I would kind of find myself sort of ruminating on it and thinking about it. And in this moment, I thought, you know, the best way to kind of get this a bit straight for me would be to try and map it a little bit. So, you know, I know it's a cheesy line, but this, that show really helped me more than it probably will help other people, because for me now, I've stopped feeling that way about my past. And I think, oh, right, it's there now. You know, I can press a button and I can hear what that day was like in my life, or what that time in my life was like. So it helped make it into a kind of linear thread rather than a kind of collection of thoughts. Because often, you know, with trauma and drug abuse and things like that, the challenge really is to integrate all of those things into one kind of comfortable state. And I think still, even a couple of years ago, I was feeling like, kind of like I was two different people or three different people, that there was that part of my life that I didn't really like to think about that much, because I'm like, I'm not there now. But I realized I needed to go back and I needed to kind of name some things and get it out there. So, like I said, it's very much for me. if other people get something out of it, then that is wonderful. And it's nice to hear that you're entertained. And the last thing I'd say is, absolutely, the idea with Room podcast as well is to do 10 minutes. I thought about this a lot, and maybe it's me, my attention span, my kind of, I try and make shows that I would want to listen to. And there's some great audio dramas out there that I could list off that I really like. For me, 20 minutes is the max that I can fully give to an audio drama. If I go to an episode and it's an hour long, I think I'm probably not going to listen to all of this at the moment.
Yeah, it's quite a big ask in a sense, because obviously generally you want to listen, you want to be able to stop listening when the creators want you to stop listening, rather than you listening to, if it's an hour long and you listen to half of it and then you stop and then you go back into it like a few days or a week later or whatever, and then you've kind of half forgotten what the first half is, it can kind of throw you off a bit. But what you did with Lost and Found, which is the three-part most recent episodes on Days of My Life, it stops at certain points. So it's very easy to, when I was listening to it, to compartmentalize each part by part. So it was very much in my head, the journey was in sort of three parts. So I found with the way you did that was incredible. And I found that if anyone's going to listen to the show, I obviously recommend listening from the start and going through all of them. But the Lost and Found, it's not only was it thrilling the whole time, but one thing I liked about your show, and it was especially heightened in Lost and Found and Dyslexic Idols, was that, they're the episode names, was that, for listeners, obviously not you, Aidan, I know you're aware of these, but the perspectives, you brought forward perspectives that, obviously everyone lives their life differently and has different reasons for doing X, Y, Z, but obviously what you speak about in Days of My Life is obviously you're struggling with drug issues and with your mother passing away and lots of these other things. And it's that journey to kind of self-fulfillment in a way. And with the Indian one, the way you went to India, it was hearing your rationale was very, very interesting, especially because, you know, you even mentioned going to, was it a monastery or was it some sort of meditation?
It was an ashram. Yeah, it was an ashram. There was a guy called Bhagwan Das and a few other kind of famous kind of yogi kind of spiritual people. And yeah, as the episode described, it wasn't the right place for me.
Yeah, and you found further on down the line. I found that was really interesting, because a lot of people are like, I want to go self-fulfillment. And a lot of people would think, you know, go to an Eastern culture, go to some sort of meditation retreat for 3 weeks, you know, saying namaste a lot, and then you'll be fine. Well, see, you didn't find that. And I think that's really important for people to realize that there's not a one-size-fits-all solution to people's problems. And that's what I think Days of My Life does really well.
When I was in India, I used to call them phony holies. So you'd meet, there's a woman that stands out in my mind that I tried to kind of do the voice for, this American second one. And, you know, and after sort of sitting in this kind of meditation circle and stuff and talking to her, you know, it was clear to me, she was talking to me and she was like so blissed out and so kind of high on this escapism of like, you know, we're here. And I was like, yeah, but you know, wherever you came from still exists. And that's what I'm thinking about is how do I go back? How do I go back to England and kind of face all of the streets that I grew up on, my family, my friends, my future life? How do I face that with some kind of hope and some kind of optimism or some kind of faith or strength or whatever you want to call it? But it's still there now. You know, you can go to Thailand and you can go to India and, you know, all those guys now that were there, now they're all back in England and they're all life coaches and they're all yoga teachers or, you know, intense vegans or not, I've got anything against vegans, but there's, they've kind of tried to make it into a business now. And they've tried to sort of transport that Eastern culture and the kind of the wisdom that they learned and then tried to make it into a business, which to me is like, well, that shows the point, you know, of what I got from over in India was I was struck by poverty. And then that made me really go, right, that's the thing, that there's people in this world that don't have an opportunity and I have got an opportunity. And that was way more profound than any kind of spiritual practice or, you know, meditation or fasting or anything like that. That gave me some hope. I was like, I've got something more than a lot of other people have. So I almost kind of put instant pressure on me, or instant motivation to go and do something with my life. And I hadn't got that in England. I felt like I was kind of in a rat race and surrounded by people. It was like, you know, get a good job, make enough money. And I was like, there's got to be more to life than that. And thankfully I found something like that in India.
And I think it mentioned in the podcast briefly, but how long were you in India for in total?
It was around 6 months.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't realize it was that long. I said, oh, that's insane, as in a good way. How long were you at the, like, for people who haven't obviously listened to the podcast, just if you want to say in brief, you got there, you obviously did the sort of yogi meditation-y part, and then from there you went on the train and things, which you speak about in I think part two, and then you get to the beach, and that's where you kind of had this, for lack of a better word, epiphany. So do you want to speak about that a bit more?
Yeah, well, I spent time in Pune, which is northern India, and that was the place that I was kind of recommended to go to. And you know, I'd done stuff before I went, like I went to local Buddhist centers and stuff. And that can be really like crushing if you're a guy that you're looking to kind of expand your mind or to gain some perspective. You know, I used to talk to this Buddhist monk about you know, how long does it take to get enlightened, and he said basically meditate kind of 12 hours a day and maybe in kind of 10,000 lifetimes you might achieve enlightenment. And I was like, don't really, I'm not going with that. And I found a lot of Buddhism kind of a little bit, it's like just pushing stuff away. It's like, I have this thing of, you know, I like feelings, you know, I like being in the struggle. I like being in the mix, you know, this sort of karmic stuff and this kind of, you know, attachment is a form of suffering. That doesn't sit well with me. So I experienced that kind of, again, coming up against that wall of organized kind of religious practice. And seeing that a lot of people were just kind of sheep, you know, following the shepherd. And so I gave that a go for a few weeks. And then I sort of decided that I could make my time last a lot longer there if I just went ultra cheap, if I just went to a beach place. That's what I had in mind. I'm going to go to a beach place. I'm going to live as poorly as I can. And that's going to buy me time. And that was the best thing that I did, was by going to this beautiful, I mean, it's heartbreaking now because it's massively touristy, but back when I went, it was still fairly unknown. This small fishing village called Arambol. And I kind of integrated into their way of life there. You know, I speak about it in the podcast. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd go and play chess with these waiters at the local cafe. I'd play football on the beach with the kids. I'd spend time in the sea. I'd rock in my hammock, and I found these brilliant kind of talks by this guy, Ramdas, who, like I said, it felt like he was talking directly to me. You know, he was saying, look, you know, the game in life is not to get high. It's not to escape. It's to be free within it. You know, he said, you know, everyone armors our hearts. We armor our hearts because things are painful. When you have empathy for other people, it can blow you away. And you freak out and you think, I can't handle all of this emotion. I can't handle that there's suffering around me. Mm. But the key is to live your life and not push that away, and to live with, you know, kind of the darker side of your life or what you see around you, but integrate that into a way where you're living with it. And that made sense to me. And I started to do that in Aranbol to the point where I was almost like Forrest Gump. There's a film, Forrest Gump, you know, when he finds out that his mum's sick and he's on the boat and he sort of just jumps off the boat and starts swimming. Mm. I had a moment in India when I couldn't get back to England quick enough. I had a plan. I thought, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go to college, or I'm going to start volunteering somewhere. And I more or less did that. I started volunteering, and that led to my career that's been going on for like 17 years now. So yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, it's an incredible journey. And as I said, I implore everyone to go and check out Days of My Life. I'll put a link in the description and whatnot. I want to ask as well, have you traveled much since going to India? Because I think you said this in the podcast that India was the first time you'd been abroad. So have you been away much since then?
Not really in a traveling kind of sense. I've been around Europe a bit. I'd still want to go to America at some point when I'm older. I want to go and explore America because I've always had a pull to go and see some of the famous sites over there. I haven't done any more sort of pilgrimages or, you know, going off to sort of find myself or anything like that.
No. Yeah. Well, I suppose the one that you did worked out really well for you. It turned things around quite a lot. And I want to ask as well, with the drug use and that sort of thing, what... In the show you say it, but obviously there's your parents divorced and then your mother got really ill and things. So how, and obviously you didn't go to school as well when you were younger after like 11. So it's, well, 11, 12. So it's like, what, with the drug use and things like that, do you think that was primarily due to you not being at school? Do you think it was due to your parents splitting? Do you think it was due to like a wide berth of things? Is there something that you kind of primarily attribute to that sort of line of your life that you went down, essentially?
There's a combination of things there. I mean, you have to remember that this was sort of 1990s, mid-1990s, early 1990s. So drugs at that point in England were very cool. And, you know, famously you had Noel Gallagher out of Oasis saying, you know, drugs is just as normal as doing a cup of tea. Yeah. And saying, you know, all politicians do it. And there was this kind of feeling that, you know, it was about the free party scene and raves and kind of summer of love, that there was a more of a sort of social acceptance to doing drugs and experimenting. I found myself in a situation where I was quite socially isolated. I had kind of emotional trauma. And when I started doing drugs, it was because I was looking for something. I was looking for something outside of my kind of boring existence. I didn't go to school. I had like a lot of kind of imagination and emotional energy in me. And I found when I started experimenting with drugs that I could kind of, I could stay with it more. And it made me very creative. And, you know, it sounds like a kind of, you know, like an ad line for gateway drugs and so on, but it quickly escalated. I started doing weed, I started drinking, and then when I started doing cocaine, I think that was when things kind of went to the next stage. And then doing ecstasy was I'll be absolutely honest about it. I still look back at doing ecstasy as some of the best nights of my life. Mm. You know, the feelings that I had with ecstasy with my friends and dancing to music. It was like I discovered a different way of living. Yeah. You know, I felt completely kind of at one with the world and with the music working with the people, and no one had told me that that life was possible. No one had told me that, hey, you can get these feelings, you can meet these people and this music, and you can carve out a way of life. But what you don't realize, particularly when you're younger, is that that is actually taking a cost on you, because before you know it, all your money's going on it, and then you're like waking up and panicking and thinking, shit, I haven't got any. And then obviously your mental health starts to be affected, your relationships. And for me, by the time that I realized, I was fully invested. I was, you know, when I was 16, I had a drug habit that was like £300 a week.
Oh, wow.
That was, you know, sort of smoking weed every day, doing bits and bobs in the week. But I was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I could spend £200-300 just sort of getting it absolutely as high as a kite. In the same respect that, like, I kind of went off to India, you know, I was looking for something else. I guess there's a few factors there, you know. If you're in emotional pain, you look for a way to get out of emotional pain. And it's natural. It's a human response, isn't it? You know,
100%
agree. If you cut yourself, if you want a plaster, but if you're feeling anxious or depressed, then you find out, oh, I take this and I don't feel like that anymore. That's kind of how it started. Just as basic as that for me, really.
Well, that's very honest of you, and I appreciate you saying that. I mean, with this show, obviously, I am not famous enough or anything, or famous at all, rather, to be able to delve into, let's say, be as honest with some of my past as I would like to be due to me having a job and things potentially happening. But to say it without saying it, I've said in the podcast before that when I was in college, I had smoked cannabis at least once. I'm not going to divulge how much or anything like that. But when my dad died, which is when I was 19, and he was ill for 18 months before that, I did self-medicate. Not intentionally, like, I feel rubbish, I need this to make myself feel better. It was around that point in my life, I came across some individuals who were involved with some things that make you intoxicated that maybe you can't buy from a shop, if we put it in that way.
Yeah.
And there were, I did go for a little phase, especially when dad died, and I didn't realize I was doing it until, you know, after the fact. But there were points where, you know, it wasn't quite as bad, but, you know, every other week I was drinking and smoking and some other stuff as well. And I did get into a little bit of a cycle. I wasn't quite as, I wasn't in it in the same way that you were necessarily, but it was that still, I feel like shit. I'm not really processing my pain properly. I'm kind of not facing, like, when my dad died, I didn't cry for like 6 months. And I'm not saying people have to cry, but I didn't realize I was holding it back until I realized I was. And, you know, I had a cry about it 6 months later after I spoke to someone about it in depth a bit more, and it kind of went from there. But even after then, for a good year and a half, I was out on the weekends doing illicit substances, and it was doing things where, like, excuse me, for certain ones, for example, you know, like you mentioned ecstasy, one of the things ecstasy does, it makes you feel absolutely amazing, it floods your system with serotonin, and you know, you feel great and happy and all that sort of stuff. And then the following day you're on the come down, which is obviously your serotonin levels regulating again to make it a normal level. But to do that, you normally feel rubbish because you have the huge amount from the night before, like, you know, candle that burns twice as bright, and then you have to kind of, your body eases up a lot, so you feel like shit. And then what do you do with that? Well, then you take something else, or you drink, or you do this to kind of get you through the come down of one thing, you do something else. And that can be a very easy cycle to get into. And with me, when I was in that, I wasn't even realizing it was a problem, because I was doing it, as I say, once every 2 weeks or so, or once a week. On the weekend, it wasn't affecting my job or anything like that. And seemingly, and I seemed in my head, I was like, it's not a problem. And then when I stopped doing it, I was like, oh wait, no, every single weekend, if I'm not doing these things, that's all I'm looking forward to. Like, all I want to do when I'm at work is I'm just thinking, oh, I can't wait to get home and do this. And, you know, I can't wait for the weekend. And I stopped to kind of enjoy things as much because I wasn't on these things. And it's a very easy cycle to go into. And I feel like, especially individuals who are more economically vulnerable or emotionally vulnerable and things. I mean, my dad passing away was awful, but apart from that aspect of my life, I was generally, in air quotes, normal. So I can see how those sorts of things can really appeal to people in more difficult times. And did you find that some of the people you were associating with and hanging out with who were also doing these kind of things were in similar either economical or emotional or any other sort of vulnerable space as yourself?
It was kind of hard because I was in a group of people and then sort of other broad groups of people. And I always felt this kind of dirty sort of shame that I never tried to let on, really, that I knew that I was like fully addicted and that this was my way of life. And I was terrified in a lot of ways because I thought I can't see how I'm going to stop doing this. So it used to be quite annoying to me that I'd meet other people who could just sort of recreationally use drugs and then sort of continue with their lives. To me, it had become my life. It was out of control. You know, that's the nature of addiction is when, you know, you can't control your behavior. That's the place that I was at. And I kind of knew that very clearly. And I thought this is going to be quite a long-term battle for me. I mean, thankfully, you know, I haven't used drugs for a long time. I don't really drink that much anymore. But it took me a while to get off. I think the sad thing is through that group of people, I know that there's some of those people that did get stuck in and did carry on, and they did develop mental health problems, mm-hmm. proper, you know, psychosis and not the inability to actually hold down a job or relationships. I always, despite how hardcore I was, I had this kind of burning drive because I knew that I was fully in the grips of addiction. I was like, this isn't going to beat me. I'm going to have to find something else. And eventually that happened for me. I started to find other things in my life that could replace that. But it's kind of bittersweet because despite being able to describe them as great experiences, ones that I probably wouldn't change, I also realized that I missed a lot of normal life and a lot of kind of normal relationship kind of stuff or building for the future. But at that time, you know, my personality was very much this kind of, my number one thought was, you know, I don't want to be in pain. So I'd probably shy away from kind of normality in you know, structure and routine. I was very much a kind of, you know, fuck off. You know, I'm going to do this my way. You're either with me or you're not, you know. But if you're that kind of guy, you don't really attract people that are going to be helpful or in it for the long term for your benefit. They're not really bothered about you as a person. There was a lot of networking and kind of, I'll sort you out, you sort me out. And, you know, this is all about keeping the party going. And when you decide to leave the party, yeah, you kind of say goodbye to most of the people that you know in that scene.
Yeah, I understand that. And it is one of those things as well, because looking back, to draw parallels with a degree of my life, is that when I was younger and when I was doing these sort of, you know, these things along with drinking and smoking and everything else, it was the nights were undeniably, like 99% of them were undeniably incredible and loads of fun and, you know, you have a great time. But I'd find a lot of the time I would just forget that, like 98% of them the next day, because it would be like when you're on, it's like when you get really, really drunk if people haven't indulged in the other sort of less legal endeavors. When you get really, really drunk and you have a great night, a lot of the time you're like, yeah, that was really fun. Yeah, what'd you do? Well, I can only remember up till like 9:30, maybe 10, and then I can't remember anything. And I was apparently up till 3 a.m. And I found that almost every one of those experiences were like that. I can remember like little snippets, bits in here, but most of the time, the next day you go, that was a great night, yep. And then by the afternoon, you've forgotten everything. And I found that that was a part of it where I was having like loads and loads of Fridays of my life, basically just not really remembering anything. Just, oh yeah, cool, I'm having fun, spending loads of money, not really doing anything in particular, just getting mullered and kind of, I don't know, wandering about or doing this, that, or the other. And it's a weird one. It's when you get out of it, I kind of find it like with a lot of things, like I was eating healthily in a weird way, because obviously you look at it and you go, why doesn't everyone always eat salad and just eat really nice things all the time? Because it generally does make you feel better overall. But it's those when you eat fast food or whatever, it's while you're eating the fast food, it feels good, even though you know it's bad for you and it's bad going long. And I was trying to explain this to someone the other day when they said, oh, I don't know why anyone would ever take drugs because obviously the risk and this, that, and the other. And I was like, I know what you're saying, but you drink alcohol. So immediately that is a drug. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's not. And I was like, we know when you have a drink and, you know, you're on a diet, you have a drink and then there's a part of you that just says, nah, you can have a burger. Nah, fuck it. Just go have a big kebab and stuff. And most people, when they're drunk, do have that sort of, fuck it, attitude. And I was like, what happens a lot of the time is you have a couple of drinks and then someone offers you this, that, or the other. And then you're like, fuck it, I'll just do it. Even though you know you shouldn't. But in that moment while doing it, it feels good. Even if the rest of the time make you feel worse. And it's a really weird state to be in, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think what you're describing really is what's wrong with the way that drugs are consumed in Britain. Hmm. And the way that they're portrayed, because that's exactly, again, it's like the poster ads against drugs. You know, I can remember the first time that I took ecstasy and it feeling like a kind of biblical moment in my life. And I'm like, you know, everyone's saying that I shouldn't do this, but yeah, it feels great. I'm having the best night of my life.
Yeah.
I'm connecting with people in a way I didn't know possible. And really, you know, the fact that it's naughty or wrong or illegal makes it into more of a thing, you know. People would be less interested in doing drugs if they were available from your local shop. If, you know, at a certain age you said, listen, I want to experiment with my consciousness, you know, I want to take things that are going to alter my mental state. And they said, okay, yeah, you can do that. It costs this much. But by the way, because of your age, because it's the first time, we have a professional person who's going to sort of do it with you, who's going to talk to you about it. That's what I think some drugs should be like. Certainly LSD, for me, that was a big changing point in my life. You know, I was lucky enough to have a group of really cool friends and we all dropped together and we did it in a country park that we knew and we felt safe. And we went on massive kind of adventures inside our minds. And it was completely safe. We didn't hurt anybody. No one died. And we came down together sort of smoking weed. And it really helped us bond. It helped me look at the way that my life was. And but I think ultimately, you know, with drugs, drugs get boring after a while. And you start to think, why can't I have that in my life without that? Mm. And that was what sort of started getting me away from drugs. Was I started to think, I think that this is in me and the drugs are helping me get to it. So why can't I get to it without the drugs? And that kind of became like a challenge or like a quest. Yeah. to say, how can I be that guy? You know, when I used to do cocaine a lot, I used to absolutely, I mean, I was like a WWE wrestler, you know, coming down to the ring.
Yeah.
That kind of confidence that they have on the way down to the ring. I used to walk into a room and I used to feel like I could talk to anybody and I could just connect in this kind of emotional way with people. But then the next day, you know, I'd be like not looking at the person in the shop, making no eye contact, because I'd be like terrified that I might say the wrong thing or they might judge me. So I had these huge kind of flip-flops and I was like, nah, I need to find some balance here.
Yeah. And I think one of, you know, a point that you touched upon there is that, you know, I've spoken about my opinions on sort of drug reform in the past on this podcast, but my main thing is cannabis should be legal. I've not had an argument for it not being legal. I think it's objectively less damaging than alcohol. If someone said to me, well, I want alcohol to be illegal and cannabis to be illegal, I'd be like, I disagree. But if you have that sort of hard line that no one should ever be intoxicated, okay, I disagree, but fair enough. But if anyone argues that, yeah, alcohol should be legal and we shouldn't be, then I think they're just a hypocrite and they haven't just... they're more just ignorant and they haven't looked into things more. But then when it comes to the other drugs, it's a bit more of a grey area and it's a bit more, you know, no one... If I said tomorrow, yeah, I want to make meth legal, people would be like, what? What's wrong with you? But then you dial it back and it's like, okay, well, we definitely should be. When, like acid you mentioned, you know, acid... is like the chances of someone actually taking a fatal dose of acid is insanely small. Same as with mushrooms, is that the main ways, I'm kind of starting to say loads of different things at the same time, but basically for all drugs, the risk is mostly there due to its legal form at the moment. So I've pitched this kind of rhetorical idea to people before, in a sense, which is, you know, if you ask people, do you want heroin to be legal? And people go, or decriminalized. People go, no, it's bad. It's like, okay, first of all, I don't believe drugs are good or bad. They're, you know, kind of like a car. You can murder thousands of people with a car driving through crowds and things, but that doesn't make it bad because it has loads of other good practical uses. And drugs are in a similar way, like alcohol is in that camp. But what I'd say is, like, would you rather have it so we have, as a random number, just an example, would you rather have 100 heroin addicts in the city and 50 of them die and 30 of them commit loads of crimes to steal from people? Or would you rather have, say, 150 or 200 addicts, but 5 of them die, 5 of them commit crimes? And the difference between the two of them being the latter one with more people but less sort of negative things coming out of it could be a way that you'd look at it if it was legal. Now, I don't think legality means everyone's all suddenly going to do loads of drugs and it's going to be a big epidemic, but the only argument I've heard against legality truly is that more people would do them. And my argument is, yeah, but people do them anyway, and the main reasons people overdose or this, that, and the other is because they think it's something when it's not. You buy it from a dealer, you buy a gram of heroin every week or whatever from a dealer, constantly doing the same amount, and then suddenly he gets a batch that's a lot stronger than you're used to. You take the same amount, and then you overdose because your body's used to it. And if you had a regulation system like we have with alcohol, then you wouldn't have that problem, if you see what I mean.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I mean fundamentally, it comes down to care. And I think, you know, in the real meaning of the word care, and we should live in a society where we care for each other and we look after each other. At the moment, the way that the drugs industry works, the illegal drugs and controlled substances, is not set up to care, particularly for young people. You have to, if you're going to do drugs, you know, it's an illegal act. You have to mix with people you might not want to mix with. You're going to go to places you may not want to go. And what you're talking about there, which is harm minimization or harm reduction, to me, that's the wrong way of looking at it. There shouldn't be any harm, you know. I agree that, you know, smack shouldn't be legal. You know, that's a clear one. But cannabis, from every point of view that you look at it, you know, I don't smoke weed anymore because I don't want to, because I don't find it, I don't find that it is complementary to my life. I'd find it a negative in my life. But from a scientific point of view, you know, it has a lot of benefits. The problem goes, and I've seen this firsthand in my professional life, is where you get young lads and young women who will sort of try weed and they'll get an extremely strong strain of cannabis and it will absolutely wipe them out. I've seen them go from kind of normal 16, 17 year olds to drug induced psychosis. And that's something that they're going to struggle with for a long, long time. If you look at all of the more progressive modern places like California and Canada, they're making cannabis legal because it's taxable. You know, it's not a drain on in terms of intensive farming for it to be grown. You know, I'm not an advocate for smoking cannabis, but when you compare it to what we have in existence at the moment, it's not careful at the moment. We're not taking care of people, particularly young people that start out with drugs. Because me, myself, I started smoking weed and that did lead me to try other things. If I'd grown up in a place where there was a cannabis shop down the road, I probably wouldn't have. Yeah, that's just my take on it.
Yeah, it's a weird one, the whole gateway drug sort of the argument, because I think saying anyone who would say weed is or is not a gateway drug is too black and white, because the problem that I find is that part of the reason it is kind of a gateway drug is because people are told, not as much now, it's because obviously with America's media and Canada and, you know, I think places like France, Portugal decriminalizing it, and it's kind of becoming a lot more widespreadly accepted. And obviously in England now you can get CBD, which is obviously part of the cannabis plant, but it's not exactly the thing that makes you high, because THC makes you high, CBD doesn't. And, you know, without getting into all the chemical details of that, it's one of those things where you are told, I remember this when I was in college, and I was told my entire life, you know, drugs are bad, just full stop. Not what drugs are, not that alcohol is a drug, not that, you know, some people can have, you know, epiphanies on mushrooms or LSD or DMT or anything like that, or great nights with friends. It's just drugs are bad. And then when I was in a state where one of my friends tried smoking cannabis, and then I tried it as well because they tried, and was like, this is actually not what you think it's like. And then you do it, and because I've been essentially lied to my entire life, then I do it and I go, oh, this is fine. Okay, I'm going to keep doing this. And then someone offered me, you know, something else when I was younger, you know, amphetamine. And it was like, well, I don't necessarily know all the ins and outs, but you can look online. But everything online is all so heavily negative. Then you get really, really drunk. You try it as a one-off, just as, you know, a lack of judgment call, whatever, one once when that happens. And then, well, you've done it and you're like, okay, well, I looked online and read all these things that everyone was saying, if you do speed, it's bad and you won't be able to ever sleep ever, and then your teeth will be chattering and everything will be awful and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, some of these things are technically true in some ways, but like you do it and it's like, oh, this is just this thing and it feels like this. Oh, it's another thing I've been lied to about. And then eventually, especially when you're a teenager, you're a lot less, you haven't got the thing to hold back your impulses as much. So you get more drunk around these people who are doing this, that, and the other, and they offer you other things. And then you're like, well, these other things I tried weren't as bad, even though I've been told they were. And then you do them and it's fine. And, you know, I've done a variety of different things and from different sort of groups of the illegal substances. And it's, they're all very, very different, but they are all under this blanket of drugs are bad and they're all bad and there's nothing else to them apart from being bad. So when you get these young people doing them and they realize, oh, I did it once when I was drunk and it actually was really cool, what else are they lying to me about? And then they don't listen to anything else. They won't, if you tell someone something is purely negative, they do it and it's not, they won't listen to your opinion. If you're honest with them and say, look, it is bad and good because there are bad parts to it and there are good parts to it, like they do with alcohol, it's a lot easier. And one other quick thing I will say is, when I was in college, it was easier for me to get cannabis than it was to get tobacco, because tobacco is regulated. Yeah. So trying to get tobacco when you're under 18, especially, you know, when I was in, this was like, you know, mid 2000s. And it was like, oh, trying to get backy, it's impossible. We had to ask people who are older than us or whoever to try and get tobacco, but we'd get weed easy because drug dealers don't ID you. And this is one thing people don't get as well. A lot of the time, they're like, drugs are bad, they need to all be illegal and no, you know, no budging. It's like, well, kids are going to get drugs. Like when I was in, as I said, when I was in college, I could get weed easily. Getting alcohol and tobacco, that was difficult because it's regulated and controlled by people who can get in trouble if they sell it to you. If a drug dealer is already getting in trouble, they're going to ID you. And that's
it. Yeah. I mean, one of the episodes, the misadventures of the cocaine kid in Days of My Life, you know, I was pulled over by the police. I was 14, you know, they strip searched me. You know, all they said to me in the car on the way back to the police station, you know, they tried to, I say in the show, you know, they gave me, the drugs are bad, you shouldn't be doing drugs, because they could see I was high. You know, and my friends were just taking a piss out of them. They're saying, oh, we only inject smack, you know, which they didn't, but it was just that blatant kind of, who the fuck do you think you're talking to? You know, we're 14, we're absolutely off our heads. It's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're not more worried about why I'm there and why I'm doing it, giving me this kind of drone message of it's wrong. And I think what you're talking about really is a culture. You know, if you think about cannabis as something that you can smoke in a cafe socially and that you can buy and it's acceptable, the image that comes to mind is of reasonable people going into a shop, paying a reasonable price for something that is safely sourced, consuming it safely, and then going about their day. Whereas what you said is similar to me, you know, the key thing was drink loads of beer at college and then do it. And that's the worst possible time to do it. It is when you're making friendships with people that you don't necessarily know or trust. You don't know what their agendas are. You've got a lot of alcohol, which is also a mind-altering substance. You know, that's the riskiest time to do it. If we could foster a culture whereby saying, okay, drugs exist in this world and we can't change that, but what we can do is make it as safe for people to do as possible. That would be what I would like to see. And yeah, you know, some people were never going to do it and that's cool. That is totally cool. But there is a hell of a lot of people that will look to go, I'm interested in that. I want to see what it's like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I couldn't have said it better myself, really. It's also one of the things that annoys me a lot of the time when people are like, a very strange thing. I don't know if you have it with some of the people you associate yourself with, but obviously myself being mid-20s in 2019, almost every person I know my age or even my mum and people like that have been to Amsterdam. right? You tell people at work, oh yeah, I go to Amsterdam, you know, I've been to Amsterdam, and they go, oh, did you go over there and smoke weed? I say, yeah, I did. And they're like, ah, that's cool. Yeah, whatever. But then if I went to my work colleagues, oh yeah, I'm not saying I do this, I want to clarify, but like as an example, I was like, if I said, oh yeah, when I get in from work, I don't really drink. I just sometimes have a joint just to kind of chill out. People go, well, you smoke weed every single day. And it's like, what? If you tell someone I had a beer every night when I get in from my call, the stereotypical glass of wine with a soap opera, that's fine. Yeah. No, don't worry about it, guys. You know, it's fine. But wait, no, you want to smoke weed by yourself? What, to chill out after a long hard working day at work? How dare you? You're disgusting. Oh no, but no, I did in Amsterdam. Oh, you got on a plane and did it over there. Oh, you did it over there, it's fine, but as soon as you come over here, you can't do it. It's like, what?
yeah And again, with the same thing with you know, doing mushrooms or acid, you know, it's completely normal in a lot of cultures for people to go on like vision trips, or you've reached an age of maturity where you're going to try and expand your consciousness. You know, like me and my friends did it. They were like lifelong friends. We were really safe. We did it in a safe place. We planned it, and it was really cool, you know, but I couldn't tell anyone about it. I couldn't tell like my peers and stuff. You know, if I went into a job interview and they said, could you describe a time in your life, you know, when you made a big change or something really positive? And I said, well, I'll tell you what, once me and my friends, we went and we all dropped a bunch of acid, and I felt connected to the universe in this way where I felt safe and that I didn't have to worry, and that we were kind of all connected, and that I could see this kind of energy. And it really reassured me, you know, I don't think I'm getting that job, you know, because they go, well, okay, that guy's a fruitcake, but that's my truth. You know, that's my truth that happened. And I genuinely wish that other people could experience that feeling. You know, it was something that I would recommend to people, but I was lucky. I had friends that were safe, and we planned it. And, you know, as we've just illustrated, often it will be someone who's just kind of taking a risk, you know, and it shouldn't be such a big risk.
And that's the end of part one. Thanks as always for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoyed part one as much as I did. Part two will be out next week, where the sort of discussion regarding drug reform and addiction continues. But then we also talk about spiritual and religious beliefs, some of the issues with mainstream's religion. We speak about sort of redemption, and we use a couple of extreme examples to try and kind of delve through the grey area that is redemption. You know, it's very easy to forgive someone who stole a loaf of bread to save their family, but if it's someone who killed someone to save their family, and, you know, how far does it go before the line of redemption is irredeemable, essentially? So we speak about that a little bit. We speak about sort of addicts again. As I said, it kind of comes back and forth between drug addicts and other subject matter. It kind of, that's a central point to this discussion. We speak about how sort of one should speak to their children, or at least our opinions on how one can talk to their children, especially someone like Aiden, who's had such a past with drugs. Some of the issues today with uniqueness and normality, the transitional phase that society is in, and loads of other things. So that's what you've got to look forward to if you tune in next week. As I said before, everyone should tune into the Days of My Life podcast. I've included a link in the description. It's a really, really cool audio drama. Each episode is between like 8 and 15 minutes, so they're really easy in bite-sized chunks. And some of them have some really, really insightful parts to them. So I really recommend people check those out. As I said, obviously coming up next week will be part two. After that should be probably part one of my chat with a gentleman who is involved with true crime, but I can't confirm that until we've had that chat. I've also got a chat due with an author, and then I've got a few more lined up in November with other podcasters and things. So, and I may see if I can get Reese or Josh or one of my other mates on, because I haven't had a mate on this, like a, obviously Tony Farina is, I'd consider a friend of mine, but you know, I who was a last week, but I mean like a long-term friend of mine who lives nearby, who I chat with in person, because obviously as listeners may be able to hear, the majority of these podcasts are done over Skype or Zoom or whatever, so the audio quality isn't as high as it is when I'm doing the podcast with people in person, but you know, that can't be helped. Anyway, I'm rambling as per usual in my outros. I ramble on. If you're a new listener, this is probably where most people switch off, because I just kind of go off on one about random shit, essentially. This time I'm not going to too much, because girlfriend's at the gym at the moment, and I'm going to be doing all my podcasting stuff quickly. quickly, just so we can have a day to chill. Going to play some video games. I recently bought Cell Damage HD on the Switch for like £6. I got Jedi Knight, Jedi Outcast on the Switch as well for like £8. And we bought Crash Team Racing for £25. So we're just going to play around with all of those. I mean, Cell Damage is a game from my youth, as is Jedi Knight. Well, obviously, Crash Team Racing was as well. But see, rambling. If you really enjoy the show, I'd say go back and check out some of my previous episodes. There's a wide variety of things I talk about. You know, I've had other podcasters on. I've had conversations just about movies. I've had ones all about video games. I've had ones with life coaches. I've had other discussions about drugs and things. There's one quite a while ago, and I think the episode title was something about festivals. I think it was around episode 30-ish. And I speak about some of my opinions on drug reform there as well. So if that's something that interests you, make sure you go back and check out that. I've had so many different people on here now. It's kind of hard to kind of, you know, generalize, but I've had Magister from the Church of Satan on. I've had a blind filmmaker called Goff. He's been on twice, or technically four times, because I've released two separate episodes, part one and part two. You know, I've had so many different guests on there. What I've started saying is, not very many people listen on YouTube, and that's fine. I only put on YouTube just to have another avenue, even they get like two or three listens per video. But what I would say is, on YouTube, I put things into playlists. So I kind of organize them. There's ones that are just funny ones. There's ones that are more science-based ones. There are ones that are more movies, ones that are about entrepreneurs and things. So I try and kind of keep them on YouTube in the playlists. So if you're someone who wants to keep listening to Genuine Chit Chat, but you're not really interested by everything and you don't want to trawl through every episode and read every single description and things, then you can do one of two things. You can go on YouTube and, yeah, check the playlists, or you can message me. You can contact me on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. You can send me a private message or a public one and just say, hey, listen to the show, really like it. I really liked this episode and this episode. Do you have any others that are similar to this or any you'd recommend? Or even just hit me up and say, look, I like these five things. Does your podcast have any of these? And you know, I'm more than happy. I will respond to anyone who gets in contact with me. So, yeah, that's it from me, I guess. But yeah, I really appreciate anyone listening to the show. I appreciate even more so anyone who listens this far in, because I know that I just go off on one about rubbish stuff. So, you know, the fact that anyone wants to listen to me have these conversations with interesting people makes sense, because all these people I speak to are far more interesting than I am. But the fact that you'd listen to the end just to see what else I have to say, it does mean a lot to me, you know. So share on social media if you can, tell your friends, find some episodes in the back catalogue. If there's people you know who aren't even into podcasts, maybe Genuine Chit Chat is a good way to get people into them, because if there's such a wide variety of things, I'm sure there's an episode for everyone, really. So yeah, that's gonna be it for me now, guys. Thanks for listening to me ramble and rant on. I'll be back next week with part two for Aiden Roswell, and pronounce his name badly right at the end. Nicely done. And yeah, thanks guys, I really appreciate all of you, and I hope you all have great weeks.